Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard. We are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and this evening we're going to do something a little bit different. I've never done this on this particular show, but we are going to be watching and commenting on a video that Professor Dungeon Master put out a couple weeks ago on rules light role-playing. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. I am being joined once again by Victor Gorchev, the Netherlands' number one sex symbol, and also a first-time guest, Mr. Malachi, who is one of our compatriots over on the Basic Experts Gilded server. So I'm looking forward to the conversation tonight. Want to remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what we're doing here on Rollin' Bones. This is one of the best ways that you can give us that little algorithmic bump, just to, you know, keep the lights on over here at Rollin' Bones. Although, let's be honest, I'm not going anywhere. Not going anywhere. And also, you can find me on the various social media, on X and Instagram. I am at Howard_RyanGregg. On YouTube, it is Rollin' Bones. Twitch is twitch.tv/RollinBonesRyan. And then Substack is RollinBones.substack.com. Substack is kind of my home for all of my various gaming thoughts and takes. You can find a whole lot of that stuff over there on Substack. It's also where I am going to be posting updates about my game, you know, that I'm working on right now, my Nighthaven setting that I am working on in collaboration with my good friend The Wonky, who is here in chat. Welcome. Glad you can make it. More details on that to come. But also want to remind everyone that you can get your Rollin' Bones merch over on TeePublic. The link will be here in chat as well. Still have the same four designs, and I'll be looking at a couple others down the line at some point. But, you know, if you want some nice Rollin' Bones merch, that's where you can find it. Anyway, without further ado, let's get to the main event here and bring on the folks that are going to help me pick apart and discuss this particular video. So first and foremost, returning to Rollin' Bones, you guys know him and love him. He is at Victor Gorchev on Twitter. He is the one and only Mr. Victor Gorchev. Welcome. Yeah.
Hoi iedereen, as we say in the Netherlands.
I already blew the Netherlands number one sex symbol early, so I couldn't do that a second time.
Yeah, I mean,
even though it is the truth.
Yeah. That goes to show how ugly everyone is here. If I'm the best, if I'm the best we have, goddamn.
Absolutely. And then also making his first appearance here on Rollin' Bones, Mr. Malachi. Welcome.
Evening.
Cool.
Hey.
All right. So, again, Malachi, at some point we're going to have to bring you back on. Usually we do the introductory questions, but we've got a lot to talk about tonight. So we will save one of them for the very end because... Okay. I do want to know your thoughts on that, but go ahead and talk about this video here. Like I said, this was released a couple weeks ago from Professor Dungeon Master, or, you know, Dungeon Craft, as he's known on YouTube. Those of you who've been around Rollin' Bones for a while, you know, I've had him on the show a few times. I generally like Dan a lot. He's a nice guy. He's done a lot for me personally. However, I don't agree with much of anything he said in this video. I really had a strong negative reaction to this one. And I'm kind of finding that I'm growing apart from him in a lot of my thoughts on role-playing. Malachi, what were your initial thoughts on seeing this video?
He's got some solid points, but I think overall he's coming from that the thinking of being involved in the hobby for 30 years or so. And I think that's going to pepper how you look at the situation.
Yep. And then Vic, what were your thoughts on it?
I agreed with some of his core ideas, but I think he takes the Wolves Light part a little bit too far. And then, you know, like we discussed before the stream a little, he specifically references like certain modern settings, which I personally believe like require a bit more crunch than what he seems to think. So.
All right, so with that, let's go ahead and bring this up. And then, you know, we'll be, for those of you who are unfamiliar with this format, we'll be watching the video and then pausing to comment on, you know, certain parts when we get to them. It's not a long video. It is in total 8 minutes. And then there's like a 1 minute ad at the beginning. So really, we're looking at like a 7 minute video here. So let's go ahead and bring this up. And let's get started.
Oh, I recently responded to a tweet that asked if I preferred a Rules Light system or a crunchy game system. And my response got a lot of likes and retweets. So I decided to make it into an episode. And if you don't know, I'm Professor Dungeon Master. And this is Dungeon Craft, where we talk about independent and homebrew D&D. And personally, I prefer a Rules Light system. Now, caveat, I am not saying this is the right way to play. It's the right way for me and my players to play. So with that in mind.
I know we're early. we're off to a Max Liao start here. We're only a minute in. And again, I don't want to be too hard on him because I like him personally. That is kind of like a nonsense caveat there at the beginning. You're making a video that's going to be seen by tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people on your widely viewed YouTube channel. You are in some way trying to evangelize your play style when you do something like that. You're trying to say, you know, you're selling what you have discovered and what you and your friends are doing at your table. So when you make a caveat like that, either you're saying, you know, you're essentially your opinions aren't worth listening to, or you're just kind of trying to cover your back. But yeah, this actually is, you know, what you want, how you think people should be running their tables. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I kind of agree with you, but at the same time, I do get that urge to kind of like cover your butt, so to speak, in this climate. I mean, we've all said stuff on Twitter where it's like obvious opinion, but people take it as your, like, you know, your anti whatever they like, and they attack you. So I do get that urge to maybe be like, hey guys, this is just my opinion, like, don't attack me. So I'm sure he deals with that a lot. So yeah.
Yeah, come along lines of, oh, I like mangoes. Oh, you don't like pineapples then?
Yeah. Yeah. But I also agree with your point. It's like, yeah, he's got a huge audience. And then the rest of his video, he's very sure of himself. Like he's very like, you know, this is the best way to play, like, almost. So it kind of does detract a little bit from his initial statement.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's like something that B-Dubs was talking about on Twitter the other day. When you put, like, your mileage may vary at the end of your take, you're kind of weakening your position. Like, you're sharing your opinion for a reason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of like, it's almost like a, you know, at least stand by what you're saying. Yep. A little bit more.
Mind, my response goes something like this. No matter how crunchy your system, no matter how complex, no matter how many modifiers, eventually it comes down to a single die roll and your character is either going to succeed or fail. So I want to get to that number as soon as possible. Why? Because I'm old and I don't have a lot of time to learn new game systems and flip through a bunch of charts and rules. What I do have is experience, and I can tell you that if you're a fifth level barbarian and you want to hit a goblin in the face, you need to roll about an 8 or better. Like, that sounds about right. In a word.
Okay. So here we get to two things that I wanted to discuss.
Yeah.
The first one is this idea of I'm old and I don't have time. In theory, you know, this is your hobby. This is the thing that you want to dedicate time to and to do well. So this whole idea of I really love to do this thing, but I don't want to take the time to actually engage with it properly. I don't understand that at all anymore. I understand, you know, not having as much time as you may want for your hobbies, but this idea of I am going to now not do my hobbies as well as I should or as well as I could because I don't want to put that time in. I don't want to make the sacrifice in other aspects of my life to, you know, make time to do this correctly. I don't feel that anymore. I really don't like that.
Shouldn't you technically have more time the older you get? Like, shouldn't you just have more time to just like sit back and like relax and engage in your hobbies? Like, that's usually the whole point of like growing older and like, you know, making a life for yourself. But I don't know. That gets a little bit too much into the weeds, I guess. But
Go ahead, Malachi.
It sounds to me a little bit like time management. You don't have enough time.
Yeah.
You gotta figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. My initial thought when he said this, I was like, what are you, Jack Bauer? And I believe I said that a couple times in the Gilded server when that video first dropped. I was just like, is the 24 clock constantly in the corner of your.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like an excuse to like further justify his, you know, his Wolves Light preferences, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But then the other thing that he mentions that's actually very important here is experience.
Yeah.
Dan has been playing the game for three, almost four decades at this point, based on stories that he's told me. Dan has had a lot of exposure to the mechanics of role-playing games. He had a period of his life where he did actually care about the rules and did, you know, treat them as something that, you know, were worth knowing. And so he's read a lot of RPG books. He's played a lot of RPGs by the book. And so at this point, you know, four decades worth of experience running and playing role-playing games, a lot of those mechanics of role-playing games are things that he's internalized. Mm-hmm. So he's not actually playing rules light. He's just referencing the rules in his head and in his experience rather than out of a single book or even multiple books. All he's done is internalize the crunch.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. But like you said in the pre-stream, at the same time, he's promoting this playstyle to like people that don't have that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be GMs who are watching this, who've never, you know, GM'd more than one or two sessions. They'll be like, oh, I don't actually have to read the rules now. Mm-hmm. And they're going to run clown shoes games that no one's going to have fun in. They're going to be like, well, why didn't this work? Because you don't have four decades of experience like Dan does.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, I might be playing like a Wolves Light game that doesn't have rules for cover, for like taking cover. But somebody wants to shoot a pistol at somebody who's behind cover. So me as a GM, I just go in my head. It's like, you know what? In fifth edition, it's like -2 or for, you know, like what was it, like half cover or three-thirds cover, whatever. But yeah, basically, like, I know the certain modifiers that other games have for cover, so I can just in my head go, like, you know, I'm just going to use that. But yeah, again, like, somebody who's entirely new, he might not, they might not have that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and before we move on, the only way to get that kind of experience is to read and understand rule books and know how mechanics impact games. That's the only way that you can, you know, understand how to, you know, set these things up on the fly, is to be literate in RPG design and RPG rules. So if you aren't, then you're not going to create rules that work well for the people at your table. It's going to feel arbitrary. It's going to feel like you pulled something out of your ass because you did, and then your players are going to get pissed at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's keep watching.
It's about immersion. As a player, I feel with fewer rules, I can become more immersed in that world. And nothing breaks the immersion like waiting for my turn. Like a rule like in 5e, initiative. Everyone rolls a 20-sided dice, and everyone's got the same +3 dexterity bonus. But each point of dexterity only makes a 5% difference, and it takes about 2 minutes to sort out who's going when. And to me, that's just too long. I agree with my youth.
Okay. Again, sorry to pause so soon.
Victor's used to it.
Yeah.
The idea of, you know, the more mechanics, the slower the game is. This is an idea that's true early on. Your game is very slow when everyone is trying to figure out the rules. However, once people start figuring out the rules, and I will add the caveat, if the game is well designed so that the rules are intuitive and make sense in the flow of the game, you know, by your first month of playing, I would imagine that even a crunchy game where everyone understands the rules is moving fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, sometimes it's kind of like a give and take. Sometimes you have to sacrifice a little bit of speed to just have, like, you know, a bit more like, I don't know, logic, like immersion, whatever you want to call it, verisimilitude. Like, going rules light sometimes just kind of like takes me out of the scene, because it's just like, well, just boiling this down to like one dice roll, just, I don't know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Okul here in chat makes a good point. I think a lot of rules light guys kind of make the mistake of, you know, essentially mistaking crunch for rules that are difficult to adjudicate. You'll have games like, you know, Pathfinder that are very kind of nitpicky and very obtuse in the way that rules work, or, you know, even like Hero System, I've heard, is kind of like this, and I've never played Hero System, so people who love that game, don't come after me. I'm just going off of reputation at this point. If the rules are not clear, then they're hard to adjudicate, but if the rules are clear, they're just somewhat dense or somewhat, you know, specific, kind of like an axe. There's not a problem with game flow there. You just have to know the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the procedures.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Malachi.
Basic, and I believe OSC is really good about having the procedures numbered out. So they'll go in this order, which it can be a big help with educating when you're new, especially when you're new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've played under GMs who are very experienced with a certain system that I personally would struggle with. Like, I would struggle with the rules and stuff like that, with complexity, whatever. But they've been playing it so long that they make it look easy. Like, the game's fast, the game's smooth. Like, mm-hmm. I barely even, like, really notice the rules, but we're still engaging with them just because the GM actually has done his due diligence, you know?
Yep. Yeah, Savage Worlds is a lot like that. Savage exactly. Worlds, from the outside, is a very crunchy game, but when you play it, it moves fast.
It does.
It's just kind of getting into the flow of Savage Worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
But Dan would look at that game and go, oh, this is too much.
Yeah.
And just kind of like throw it to the side.
Yeah, exactly.
YouTube colleague Wylock. Nothing kills momentum more than the words "roll for initiative." Just ask who began the hostilities. They go first. In Easy D6, players always go first unless surprised by the monster. And DM Scotty doesn't stop there. He eliminates stats. He writes, in many game systems, you build heroes with attributes and skills represented by numbers. These numbers slow down play because you often need to reference numbers on your character sheet or add them to die rolls. Easy D6 replaces this with a concept called a boon. If you're trained in fighting or stealth, you get advantage when you roll. You have 10,000 hit points.
Okay, before we get into hit points, the whole, you know, why do we have stats thing from EZD6? You have stats to, you know, measure your ability to do something. The way that I have explained it to people in the past is, you know, stats are your innate aptitudes for certain, you know, types of actions. So your strength is how good you are at heavy lifting, and your dexterity is how like natural an athlete you are. Your intelligence is your aptitude for, you know, reading and writing and linguistics. Your wisdom is your aptitude for common sense and intuition. And then any skill-based system takes it a step further with these are things you're specifically trained in. So yes, it's an added layer of complexity in that you now have a differentiating factor between your natural aptitudes and things you're trained in. But that's an important distinction to make.
Mm-hmm. Well, he shows like a system that kind of like just boils it down to the modifiers, but that kind of goes back to that whole experience thing. The reason that we know that, like, you know, those plus one, plus two, plus three modifiers are like a thing is because of D&D, of the way D&D like does them or did them back in the day. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And first subtraction was hard. Now addition is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just getting kind of progressively lazier with, I don't want to add numbers.
Yeah.
All right, now let's hear about this hit point thing.
No, having lots of health adds too much fussy math. Player characters have three strikes. Three strikes, and you're out. Simpler systems allow you to play more game in less time.
Okay, before we get into that, I do generally agree that hit point bloat is a problem. I think hit points really should be a measure of physical health, and you know, by that standard, they should be lower because you can only take so many hits with a sword before you bleed out. I don't like hit point bloat, and I don't really like the idea that hit points represent your luck as well as your physical health. So I don't know if you guys have anything to say about low hit points versus high hit points.
It depends on the system, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. The hit points have always been an iffy subject.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to health in a system, Savage Worlds, the way they handle it has always been my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to the hit point thing, I really think 3E messed that all up with the bloat there.
Jeffro here in chat, if Moldvay Basic and Keep on the Borderlands is too much game for you, then you're in the wrong hobby. Pretty much. Like, honestly. Now, I'm going to back this up a little bit just so we can kind of get the full sentence here.
Out. Simpler systems allow you to play more game in less time. In a typical session, we'll play for about 2.5 to 3 hours. And in that time, we'll get done about 5 to 12 encounters, 3 of which are combat. I have a module called Macdeath. It's based on the play Macbeth, and it's system neutral. It's from Quest Givers. You can get it at the link below. One convention, I forgot the character sheets, so I just wrote out everyone's hit points on...
Okay, I'm going to pause because this is going to be a separate thing to talk about, this incident with Macdeath. As far as rules, as far as rules slowing down gameplay, it's not rules that slow down gameplay. It's arguing over rules. It's a GM not being decisive in laying out rulings. It's trying to, figure out, does this specifically, it's all the hemming and hawing and the back and forth and the litigation over the rules. The rules themselves do not slow the game down. And it says something about a system if there has to be some amount of adjudication. It also says something about the players and the GM if there's a court case every time you know, a dispute over the rules comes up. I've certainly had games where didn't even matter what system we were playing. Just one player was going to argue no matter what, if things didn't go exactly his way. Yeah. But yeah, like it's not rules that slow the game down. It's the way that we interact with the rules. And it's about kind of overcoming this need to constantly litigate and adjudicate and just kind of be able to reference the rules quickly. And that just comes with time and experience, which you're not going to get if you try to follow this path of play.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, like, I hate to hammer on this point, but it said the whole experience thing again. Like, he has all this knowledge to fall back on, and that's why he finds it easier to go, like, rules light. But meanwhile, he's promoting this playstyle to people that don't have that knowledge, and, I don't know, he's setting them up for failure, I believe.
Yeah. I'm with Vic.
And I do want to address this point here, and I guess this is the best place to address it. Crafty Matt, Matt, I hope your mom's doing well. You know, prayers for her swift recovery. Says, do not forget what PDM is. He does not want to spend time teaching people a game where he spent his entire day teaching people basic math, English, etc. While I understand where he's coming from, I certainly don't want to sell people nuts and bolts during my my personal time. I can't turn off the fact that I'm a salesman by trade. That kind of influences the way that I approach communication and approach the hobby. Is, you know, my background in a, you know, technical end of sales. And certainly that gives me, you know, certain aptitudes that other people don't have. Just because he's not at school doesn't mean that Professor Dungeon Master is not a teacher. He should have the aptitude to clearly communicate how you play this game to his players. And doing so shouldn't be... It shouldn't be that big a burden, especially, you know, again, if this is something you love, the simple act of instructing people shouldn't be so much of a burden that, you know, oh, I do this, you know, 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to have to teach. I don't want to have to instruct people. You know, the money's not great in education. Isn't it a passion? To instruct people how to do things and do them well, or how to, you know, especially with him as an English teacher, read and comprehend and get a deeper meaning out of text.
Well, how much do you actually have to teach players anyway? I've had plenty of games where I just jumped in. I me as a player, like, no idea how this system works, but the GM did. And, they're the ones that then take control. Like, they just tell me, like, I just tell them what I'm going to do. And then they, you know, adjudicate, that's the word. they adjudicate, like, the rule and the mechanics, but I don't have to really know as the player. If that makes sense. I don't know. You get what I'm meaning?
Yeah.
It didn't take me long to teach three guys how to play Savage Worlds.
Yeah.
Maybe an hour, get the basic gist of it down.
Mm-hmm. I ran twice that for my drunken, he was at 60 at the time, 60-year-old dad and my equally drunk brother who had never even played tabletop games before. They didn't even know what tabletop games were. But I ran twice that for them and it was great because I knew the rules and that was enough. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I taught my mom, my dad, and both of my sisters how to play 5th edition in an evening. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's and also Full Metal Dragon here. It's on the players. The players don't pay attention. It's the players that don't learn the rules. And this also goes for the game master. Yeah. If the game master doesn't bother to study their system, you're not going to learn anything. So yeah, it does take time outside of actually playing the game to learn how to play. But if this is something you want to do, then that's time well spent. Because you're now learning how to do something you love better. better.
Yeah.
So I don't see the problem with, oh, you know, it's like homework. It's homework you want to do in theory. So what's the problem?
Yeah.
All right. So now this this McDeath section, because I know one person in particular got very triggered over this.
Death. It's based on the play Macbeth, and it's system neutral. It's from Questgivers. You can get it at the link below. One convention, I forgot the character sheet, so I just wrote out everyone's hit points on post-its, and I handed everybody, okay, Angus, you have 18 hit points. Ross, you have 17 hit points. And I told the players, you're mighty Scottish warriors, and you're good at every weapon. You just tell me what you want to do, and I'll tell you what you need to roll. And the game went fine. No complaints. Everyone had a great time. And I've run Macbeth at conventions many, many times. I always use a stopwatch. I clock it in at about 2 hours 15 to 2 hours 30 minutes, and that's about how long it takes to see Macbeth, the play, performed on stage, or a movie version of it. And that's how I want my game to feel. I want it to feel less like a tactical exercise and more immersive, like a movie or a play that you're watching. And although this might...
You kind of made my point there for me, though, because you said, like, you tell me what to do and I tell you what to roll. Well, you don't need a Wolf's Light system for that. You were suggesting... It could be like GURPS, but if the GM understands GURPS, then yeah, it works the same way rather than if you're just playing like D6.
Mm-hmm. But the character sheet issue, to kind of begin with that, and then you know we'll keep going along the same lines. I was talking about this with my good friend the wonky Keelan Halverson, and this idea of not having character sheets, he said it creates an ambiguity between kind of, you know, what players are, how players are able to interact with the you know, world of the game. And I have to agree with that. While we do like to say it's not just what's on your character sheet, it's also, you know, what your brain can come up with, the character sheet is... You know, that's your passepartout. It's your your item that allows you to interface with the world of the game. It tells you what your character can and cannot do, or at least what your character can do. And so if you take that away from your players, they don't, you know, have character sheets. They're not able to look at their sheet and go, I've got this thing that at first glance doesn't seem useful, but we're in this situation where it seems like, you know, casting animal friendship might do something to change the dynamic here. You're taking tools away from your players to interact with the world of the game when you take away, their device that hooks them into the world of the game. So, you know, taking that resource away from your players is doing them a disservice, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But like Vic was saying, it doesn't take, you don't have to have a rules light system to just say, tell me what you want to do and I'll tell you what to roll. That's how you teach people to play the game. That's every system. That's mm-hmm. how every player begins.
Yeah. I had no idea what the hell I was doing when I first started playing D&D, but the GM did, and that was all that was needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Jeffro says, immersive doesn't actually really mean much of anything. And I know there are people out there who love immersion. However... You know, you are actively playing a game, and you know that you're actively playing a game. The goal of this is not to forget that you're playing a game. It's kind of like playing a video game in that way. While you're playing a video game, you know that you're playing a game. You know that you are, you know, putting in artificial inputs that are making things happen on the screen in front of you. But you can still enjoy what's unfolding in front of you as you interact with it.
Yeah.
This idea that games have to be fully immersive is an impossible standard that I think a lot of people put on themselves and put on their games. It's the scrub mentality in a lot of ways.
Well, why have mechanics and controls for, like, you know, a fighting game when you could just do have like a quick time event and just watch your character do like cool kung fu kicks while you press X at the right time?
Yep.
I'm not trying to be shitty, you know, I'm not trying to like be mean to him or whatever, but yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's what a lot of the kind of, you know, rules light apologia boils down to. You kind of have to approach it with this, you know, reductio ad absurdum point of view, because if, you know, if rules make your game slower, then why do your minimal rule, like, why does it naturally stop when, you know, you reach a certain minimal threshold? If rules slow the game down, why do we have any rules at all? Why aren't we just, you know, playing Ninja Turtles on the playground at this point?
Well, it's like I told you before the stream started. So I used to play those online text games. I did a lot of role-playing on them. 99% of the time, I played some that had like mechanics and stuff, but 99% of the time that was a completely free form. We didn't roll any dice or whatever. You just wrote what your character did. And then the other person like wrote their response, and there were like some unwritten rules, like what you could and couldn't do. Like, you know, you couldn't just say like, I shoot you in the face. Like, you had to be like, I attempt to shoot you in the face, like blah, blah, blah. But like, but having done that for so long, that's why when I play tabletop games, I want to engage with dice. I want to engage with mechanics and stuff, because otherwise I might as well just go back to that freeform role-playing. Like it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just, that's just something to like actually rolling a dice to see if my bullet like penetrates cover and hits you, versus just me saying that, you know, I'm shooting at cover and then you get to respond to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And Jeffro kind of makes another good point here, that engagement is a much better goal for an RPG than immersion. It's, you know, like Vic said, wanting to deal with those mechanics, wanting to, you know, deal with the complexity of the rules, and also wanting to interact with the world of the game. Yes, there is an immersive aspect to it, but immersion is not the end all be all. It's, you know, what brings people back to your table over and over again, night after night. That's your goal, is to get players excited about coming to the game, not necessarily to get them immersed in your world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems shocking to some, the idea that your game master would not give you a character sheet. This wasn't uncommon back in the 70s. Some GMs just kept track of everything. Some didn't even let their players read the rules. And you could read all about it in John Peterson's excellent The Elusive Shift. I personally prefer.
Again, just because GMs took all of the load of the rules on themselves doesn't mean you don't need the rules. Someone still had access to the rules and was still adjudicating based on the rules. That doesn't mean you can just get rid of the rules part because not everyone was involved in the process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And now he's like going to talk about... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Vic.
No, it doesn't make the point. It doesn't make the case for like rules light like you think it does. Like, no. Yeah.
Yep. And now he's going to talk about mukbang. Like, that's something to actually shoot for as a standard of quality.
Mukbang. Yeah.
For simple character sheets, this is Merc Bori. 4 stats, 12 equipment slots. Index card RPG. All the bonuses are clearly labeled. In mazes, you get 3 edges, 3 things your character does well. This one is for the simplest role-playing game system.
That is ass design. That's all I have to say about that. Like, what the hell even is this?
Yeah.
Like I said,
I might as well just go back to the freeform roleplay that I used to do then. Like,
Yeah.
That gives me the ultimate freedom.
Yeah.
I've never read this game, but one glance at the character sheet and I'm pretty confident I know how to play. This is Deathbringer. 6 ability scores, armor class hit points, and it's the size of an index card. That's it. It takes about 1 to 2 minutes to make up a character, no app required. And just because
it takes about 1 to 2 minutes to make a character in Castles and Crusades, in OSE, in Beckme. Again, there's lots of not rules light games where it takes 1 to 2 minutes to make a character
and fit on an index card.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the character sheet is simple doesn't mean the player has fewer options. They actually have more options. In your game, can you slingshot suplex a demigorgon? In mine, you can. You just...
Point of order. You can only slingshot suplex someone if there are ropes to slingshot suplex them off of.
I'll just cobra clutch him.
Exactly. But again, you know, there are crunchy games that have hand-to-hand combat systems. Not to be too in the weeds and you know, anal about it, but there are crunchy games that allow you to slingshot suplex the Demogorgon if you want to. Even there, you know, there are games in the middle that allow you to do that. There's grappling rules in 5th edition if you hate yourself. There's just because you haven't like outlined the mechanics for it doesn't mean your game is more freeing. Honestly, I find a lot of kind of the free form, you can do whatever you want in my rules light game to make everything feel kind of samey and bland.
Yeah.
Tell me what you want to do and I'll tell you what you need to roll. And someone in the comments inevitably says, well, a rules light system might work well for a one shot, but not for an extended campaign. To which I reply, my campaign has been going for 30 years. In my experience, the opposite is actually true. Crunchy.
Well, your campaign. Go ahead, Vic.
Did he use that same rules light system for 30 years, or did he start with like first edition and then played that for like 5 years and then maybe move to second edition? And then maybe like now he's like doing the rules light stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, he doesn't say.
Yeah, you're getting into this whole, you know, you've been playing for 30 years with the same people. Yeah. Everyone at that point is now experienced with the game. So yeah, you can start to let things slide as far as specifically referencing the rule set that you're using. You know, like Jeff Rose says, I've been playing D&D wrong for 30 years. It's the 1776 argument. Mm-hmm.
Games lead to overpowered characters and lots of bookkeeping. That's why I always try to keep things simple. My game Eldritch Hack is D20 Lovecraftian horror. You choose a profession, and if whatever you want to attempt falls into the wheelhouse of that profession, you just add a skill die, a D6, to your roll. So a PI might gain a skill die for following people, tailing a car, or firing a handgun, and this idea works with almost any genre. Let's say you want to play an espionage game. You want to play Mission Impossible, but that IP hasn't made it into a role-playing game yet. Let's make one up. You're a spy in the Impossible Mission Task Force, and you're driving through the streets of Rome in your Ferrari, being pursued by enemy spies, and they're firing machine guns, and you want to evade them, so you want to somehow get that car up on two wheels and drive through this narrow alley. And I say something like, okay, that's an amazing stunt, roll a 15. And you say, but wait a second, I'm Ethan Hunt, the world's greatest spy. And I say, roll a 7. And if you roll a 7 on the nose, I'm going to say, well, you barely make it through the alley, but the roof of the car gets scraped and you lose your side view mirror. And if the pursuers want to catch you, they have to do the same thing. And if they roll a natural 1, it's a huge fireball explosion. I ran a similar scenario called...
Okay. So this is one of the things that I wanted to specifically talk with Vic about, because we've had this conversation a few times. He's using the example of a modern espionage game, you know, Mission Impossible in this case. There's a lot more moving parts when you move your system from medieval fantasy into a modern world with modern technology, because modern technology is complicated, and this is, once you introduce even like rudimentary firearms, mm-hmm. there has to be a little bit more mechanical complexity. Otherwise, things very quickly fall apart and very quickly begin to feel kind of bland and samey.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. I actually don't mind the whole like background skill system. It's like, I'm a detective, so I know how to tail people. I know how to shoot a pistol. Like, I'm fine with that. That's actually how my own system that I'm writing works, sort of. But What I don't do is like hand wave equipment. Modern equipment, especially like you said, firearms, but even like spy gadgets, if we're talking about like Mission Impossible and stuff, there should be some crunch to that, in my opinion. Because like not every pistol is the same. You might be using different ammo. You might be using armor-piercing ammo. You might be using hollow points. Well, that should be a mechanical difference there. You might have a suppressor on your pistol. You might have a red dot. Your pistol might be capable of firing in burst or full auto. There should be different rules for doing that than versus doing single shots. In my opinion, there should be rules for how you engage against cover. Against like armored opponents, like all this stuff, like there's more that comes to that, in my opinion, than just like roll a 15 and we'll see what happens.
Malachi, you mentioned the James Bond role playing game. I have Classified, the retro clone of that. This is the finest espionage role playing game ever created, and I will defend that statement vociferously, if I have to. This is a crunchy game because there's a lot that goes into espionage. There's entire separate mechanics for shooting and driving and hacking, because hacking is not a simple process. You don't just monkey bash on the keyboard while green text flies across the screen. There's like whole processes that go into accessing something that you're not meant to access on a computer. There's systems for gambling and interrogation and there's a whole lot that goes into espionage, more than just roll and you try to hit a certain target number. Because once you reduce complicated things to that simple a system, then you have kind of broken the engagement. That is a way where mechanics are an immersive aspect of role-playing games. You break that immersion when you take something super complex and go, just roll a dice and I'll tell you if your wish comes true.
Well, I also think there should be a reason why characters have to pay attention to what gear they're using. Like, even in a fantasy setting, there should be a mechanical difference between a short sword and a spear. There should be a mechanical difference between somebody who spent 1 gold to buy a shitty dagger versus tonight who spent like 300 gold to get like an awesome longsword. And the same is with like modern firearms. There should be a difference between some level 1 character who like bought like a high point pistol for like $10 versus like a dedicated like special forces guy who has like a tricked out M4. There should be like a massive mechanical difference in that, in my opinion. So yeah, like, it's fine to have like your core game be like maybe a little bit simplified, like background skills and stuff like that. But all the side stuff, there should be some mechanical complexity there, in my opinion.
Malachi, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I think Nick hit it pretty good.
Percy Block makes a good point here in chat. Get shot with shotgun. Meh, flesh wound. Yeah.
Well, in my systems that I'm writing, so for like modern necessities, shotguns, if you're using buckshot, they have like a chance that if you shoot them, that an opponent next to the person that you're shooting, if they're like within melee range of the target, they also get hit because you're using buckshot. And I want to simulate that whole like movie thing where like the buckshot spreads and like takes out like multiple opponents. So yeah, that's like an added mechanical complexity that wasn't there before, because at its core, I'm just using like the normal like missile rules, like crossbows and bows and stuff. But because I'm dealing with firearms, I had to add a little bit more to that.
Yep. And Full Metal Dragon must get classified. It's on drive-thru, and it is straight up it's Victory Games James Bond with all of the copyrighted materials taken out. It's a OGL retro clone type game. And so if you like that Victory Games James Bond game, Classified is the modern iteration of it. And expands with a little bit more modern technology than what was available in 1987 when that game came out. So
had it too.
Highly recommend. And it's fully compatible with all of your James Bond modules if you still own some of that stuff.
Nice.
They should pay me money for that.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff O'Dam mentions like Corkum, but well, Professor Dungeon Master, he mentions the Ferrari. Like, okay, do you have a mechanical difference between a Ferrari and a moped? Well, should be probably.
Yeah.
A Ferrari and a muscle car.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the same thing Ethan did in his Ferrari in my Fiat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd rather do what Bourne did with the Mini.
Yep.
Spy Hard, which is available on Patreon. I show you how I created the scenario, and you can watch my players play it pretty much in live time. We have shootouts, car chases, high-stakes gambling, and it's pretty much run with me saying, okay, roll this on a 20-sided die. Rules like games are also more accessible for newer players. If I invite my friend over, and she's never played a role-playing game before, and she wants to play a ninja, she shouldn't have to read 700 pages of rules to play the ninja effectively. My friend may not know what to do in terms of combining.
Yep. Yeah. She doesn't have to.
If it's I can make a ninja in GURPS, and I've never played GURPS, and if the GM knows how to run GURPS, then I can play the ninja. I just be like, I want to hang from the ceiling in the shadows and then drop on this guy when he walks beneath me and then stab him in the neck. And then the person who knows GURPS, they can tell me exactly what I need to do.
Yeah.
Yep. I read two guys in Savage Rifts, and they never read any of the rule books.
Yeah.
And it went great.
Hmm. Yeah, it's just about kind of fearlessly engaging with the mechanics. I mean, you know, people talk about Mother May I games. You're kind of encouraging that when you set up this style of game. You're kind of encouraging, well, you know, can I do this? You know, just do it. Even if you don't know the rules, just say what you want to do. And then even in a rules heavy system, a GM will be able to tell you, yeah, roll this, roll this, roll this.
Yeah, exactly.
And then if you are enjoying yourself and you're starting to figure out kind of how particular mechanics work, then you can get yourself a copy of the PHB. Then you can read the 700 pages of ninja rules. God help you. And, you know, figure out all the ins and outs of being a ninja and be the best damn ninja you possibly can be. Or if you don't particularly care to do that, you can continue to, you know, just kind of casually bop around playing, you know, the occasional role-playing game. But if you want to do this, yeah, eventually you'll have to read the rules, but you don't have to even like start.
No,
you have to play and then begin to pick up on the rules and begin to study them yourself to play better.
When I first played Shadowrun, and this was second edition, I believe, and then we moved on to third edition, but this was like one of those text games that I mentioned. And this was like late 90s, early 2000s, so it wasn't that easy to even get like PDFs or whatever. So for months, I played Shadowrun without ever having like even like seen what the book looks like. But I just trusted the people that were like running the sessions to like knew what the hell they were doing. And I was just playing my character and I did all sorts of cool shit without ever having even glanced at any of the, at any of the official rules. So, yeah, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Rex Teal makes a good point here. Easy to learn does not automatically equal rules light. There are lots of, you know, we talk about rules light and crunchy. You know, they're on a spectrum, and there's definitely stuff in the middle, and a lot of the stuff in the middle is easy to learn but does have crunch. However, I get the sense from this video that a lot of those games that are in the middle, even some that lean more towards rules light, Dan would look at and go, that's too much. I just want to make it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, boiling everything down to a D20, like, I don't know, that just doesn't work for me when you're dealing with like modern equipment and modern concepts and, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, Blackwell says that's also how Vic played Horde Wars. I pick up the rules over time. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are, they learn that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, like Vic mentioned, there was a time, and this was a time that Dan did most of his gaming in, where access to the rules was based on being able to find it in your local comic shop or your local B. Dalton or, you know, whatever it is you had in your town. So there are a lot of people who had to learn how to play games just by, you know, engaging with the rules in each session. They never actually got to read the rules. However, we now live in the age of the PDF.
Yeah.
So while, you know, that was a way to learn how to play games, nowadays accessibility of rules is not, you know, it's not as difficult as it once was. Yeah. So there, like, that excuse is almost gone now. If you are enjoying something, you can get the PDF, and then let, you know, unless you're playing a WotC game where they want to make PDFs as hard to get as you possibly can, you can, you know, you can get the PDF for just about anything you want to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like I said, like when I first started playing tabletop games, it was very hard to get PDFs. You had to risk like LimeWire or something, or you had like a friend who maybe had like the PDF. And plus, you know, I'm European, and especially back then, it wasn't that easy to get physical books. I would have to, like, maybe order them in Britain at, like, a huge markup with, like, huge shipping costs. And, you know, I was, like, pretty young at the time. I didn't have much money. So that was out of that was usually, like, not an option either. So, yeah, I was usually relying on GMs knowing what the hell they were doing and me just being a player and, yeah, just doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I really never had a player that completely read a rule book that often. Just a handful of times, and they were only really, it was really a benefit for when I wasn't sure of a rule.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a bunch of great players. Yep. So I to me, there's no correlation between playing and understanding a game and having read the rule book. Mm-hmm. If you have a good group and GM.
Yeah. Basically, so far, a lot of his supposed benefits of going rules light aren't really like benefits of rules light. You can apply them to pretty much any game.
Yeah. Yeah. It mostly comes down to being a good dungeon master. Like being able to run new people through your game and knowing the. I will say, Malachi, to your point, someone has to know the rules.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, yeah.
There has to be someone who is learned in the rules in order to play the game, or at least in order to play the game as intended.
But, yeah, well, I'm saying from my experience on running games, I was the one that was reading all the rule books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, as long as someone knows the rules and someone is conversant and literate in the rules, then it doesn't matter if it's a crunchy game or a rules light game. You can teach anyone to play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So let's see if he has anything to say here in the last like minute or so of the video.
Skills and feats for optimal success, but her character, the ninja, knows exactly what to do. I should be able to crunch those numbers for her and say, all right, roll a 9 to kick that guy off the roof. In a rules-like game, the game master is empowered to make rulings and decisions on the spur of the moment. And contrary to the belief of some people, those decisions aren't arbitrary. The game master is using the most advanced supercomputer of all time, the human brain. And inevitably, when
the game master is, again, using the most advanced supercomputer, the human brain, that has absorbed the lingua franca and mechanics of role-playing games so that you understand how the scenario is supposed to work, even in a game that does not provide you with enough structure or framework to actually make it work.
Yeah.
You're counting a lot on your experience there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's talk about these things, people will say, well, what you're talking about demands a lot of trust on the part of the players in the Game Master. And it's like, why wouldn't the players trust the Game Master? What did your Game Masters do to betray you? Why would you trust a Seattle hipster you've never met to be an authority on hobgoblins, which are not even a real thing? The only thing a game designer has is probably a degree in English, and I've got two of them, and I can tell you that does not help you when designing encounters with dragons or spaceship combat, because those things aren't real. Rules Light Games allow you to cut all the charts and the cumbersome rules and rely on the greatest supercomputer ever created, the human mind. Trust the Game Master. Your games are going to feel faster, smoother, less grindy, and you'll be able to play more game in less time. At least that's what I think. What do you think? Share your thoughts in the comments below. Also below, you'll find links.
Okay, and that's pretty much the long and short of the video. Again, he comes back around to it at the end of the video. You know, he's internalized all these rules. He knows how a role-playing game is supposed to work. And yeah, I understand the people who are currently making role-playing games, a lot of them also don't know how role-playing games are supposed to work. But when you are an inexperienced game master who's never played a role-playing game, you do have to rely on the book to teach you how hobgoblins work, because, you know, you don't know a damn thing about hobgoblins either. So,
yeah. Well, he mentions faster and smoother and stuff, but that's, for me, that's not the end all be all. Like I said, if I want that, I can just go back to completely free form role play. But I want to engage with the mechanics. I want the fact that I'm driving a Ferrari and I just spent like $10,000 on like a tricked out assault rifle and I'm wearing like, you know, the best armor I can buy and like all this stuff. I want that to matter. Like, yeah. I don't want that to just be boiled down to like, yeah, roll me a 15 and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, like when you strip away that complexity, your Ferrari becomes car.
Yeah.
And your tricked out assault rifle becomes rifle.
Yeah, and exactly.
At that point, again, I know immersion is not like the end all be all, but when you have someone like this who's talking about how immersive Rules Light games are, when you strip out a lot of that complexity, you're targeting the very foundation of the thing you're trying to bolster in immersion for a lot of people. So, like, I don't really understand how Rules Light does this better than any other game. It really just boils down to game masters need to understand the rules and understand how games should be run and then teach their players how to play the game. And you can do that with a crunchy game. You can do that with a Rules Light. There are GMs out there who can run GURPS in their sleep. I guarantee it, because they've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, exactly. And they make it look easy. And then you try it and it's like, what the hell am I doing? But yeah.
So ultimately, I think the ultimate conclusion here is it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter the level of crunch in your game. It still comes down to understanding how games work. And my argument is that when you strip away the complexity, when you strip away essential mechanics, you start to target the very foundation of how games work and undermine other less experienced people's ability to actually understand and run games effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just it's be a participant. To be a player.
Mm-hmm. And I know, like, this is up there with me saying absolutely as things that people should probably take drinks when I bring it up, but Chesterton's fence. Before you tear down a fence, you need to know why it was put up there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
When you start pulling mechanics and start pulling complexity out of games just because, you know, we have to reduce all the weight, you know, complexity is bad, complexity is inherently bad, and so we have to remove it all because we don't have time. You know, we've got the 24 counter here in the corner, we have to make every second count. So we're just going to pull all this stuff out, you know, without understanding why it was put there in the first place. It just, you know, it doesn't seem like this needs to be here. So I'm just going to cut out this catalytic converter.
Yep. That's a big thing I've heard in the Savage World side of things. You got to run by the book.
Yeah.
For at least like 4, 5, 6 sessions before you change anything. So you understand how all the rules interact with each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you've always got people telling you, but, oh, you can never, like, be, like, 100% like war. Well, of course, but you should try.
Yeah, I guess, close as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, that's why I talk about Raw as a process and why I compare it to, again, to bring up the topic of religion, sanctification. It's a continual process. It's a continual movement towards an ideal. Yeah, you're not, you may never achieve the perfect 100%. We did all the rules correctly every single time in this session, but you did better at following the rules this session than you did last session. And you're a damn sight better here, you know, 4 months in than you were when you first started and had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's very satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If all you ever do is like, yeah, just roll a 15 and we'll see what happens. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that allows too much GM fiat into everything.
Well, it's also just not satisfying.
Hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. There was a time where I basically treated everything that PDM said as gospel. And this was, honestly, not that long ago. I'm kind of ashamed of myself when I look back at things that I was saying, even like just a year ago. You could even go in Basic Experts Gilded server and find me saying things that are eerily reminiscent of stuff that the professor has said in this video, and you know, build a case against me as a true connoisseur of role-playing games. But it really, the more I have examined role-playing and the more I've studied this hobby and studied the rules and understood why rules exist, the more I realize that this is not a helpful way to teach people to play the game. It actually does a little bit more harm than good.
Mm. So what you're saying is that you fell for the TBN and an associate's cult?
Yes. Yeah, I was indoctrinated.
Yeah.
Specifically, Crossface held me down, put me in a full Nelson. And
I will say, the professor does have a good series on Keep on the Borderlands. I will get behind him on that. That's a good way to learn how to change up a module to kind of fit with your setting and everything.
Yeah. And he does have some good videos on narrating combat and, you know, getting people to like read Robert E. Howard and understand how to describe things. A lot of that stuff is good. That's where I think it does. That's where him being an English teacher does kind of bring some stuff to the table and, you know, helping people improve their narration and describing of combat and certain things in role-playing. And that's really where I feel like his stuff has value. But when it comes to the mechanical side of things, especially recently, I just don't, you know, I'm not with him anymore. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he boils the whole thing down to like the goal should be like narrative and immersion and stuff like that. But his idea of immersion isn't my idea of immersion.
Right.
Like, so, like I'm less immersed if I'm driving a Ferrari and I'm using my $10,000 assault rifle and all you're making me roll is just a d20 and I'm like seeing if I can beat like, you know, an arbitrary like number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's I don't know how this happened. Well, maybe I do know how this happened. I always, when in doubt, I blame the Forge. But there's this idea that has kind of, I guess, sprung out of GNS theory and all the, you know, Forge conversations and stuff like that. There's this idea that mechanics undermine immersion. And I, like, that's just total nonsense.
Yeah.
Maybe it does for some people. Maybe it does for, you know, Ron, whatever his name is. And
Edwards.
And, yeah. And the people who, I guess, ruined gaming for 20 years. Maybe they don't like having to, you know, reference rules or do basic addition. But for the rest of us, sometimes mechanical complexity does actually get us involved and get us engaged in the game. It's not all about, you know, sitting around telling campfire stories.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like board games. Some people like playing really complex board games, and other people like playing the game of life. It doesn't mean that the game of life, because it's simpler, it's better.
Yeah, some people like Candyland.
Yeah.
I think we call those people sociopaths, but some people like Candyland.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're four...
I will say, though, even at four, there's something frustrating about constantly just turn... Oh, go back to Gloppy again? Didn't we just go there? So yeah, I was just gonna kind of like begin closing. So if you have more to say, then go ahead.
Oh no, like Sly Blue Demon just said, if I'm playing a survival game, I want mechanics that fit that. Like yeah. Like I want hunger, I want thirst, I want like exposure, like, you know, I want weather, all that stuff. Yeah. And again, like you could boil that down to like just like a D20 roll like every day. It's like if you roll less than 15, you starve to death. But like that's not fun.
Encumbrance ruins immersion. So we're not going to worry about how much you can carry. You can bring a refrigerator filled with food and water with you in the survival game.
Yeah. Speaking of story gamers, sup, John?
Here he is. The basic expert. Well. Unfortunately, I know some of you are just now joining us. That's really all that I wanted to discuss. I guess final thoughts from you guys. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you guys wanted to bring up here?
No, I've pretty much said what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Cool.
And again, nothing against him personally. I just don't agree, and I don't think his arguments were that compelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I went pretty hard on him tonight. I do genuinely like Dan as a person, and he's been very kind to me over the years. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, I told you this was happening, so I'm sure you've watched this at some point. No hard feelings. I just don't agree with you. And that's all there is to it.
Exactly.
So, again, that's all there is. I just think you're wrong. So, no hard feelings, I guess.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if he does like a reaction video to this and it blows up?
I'd appreciate the bump, honestly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it for the discussion. Before we sign off here, though, we do have a little bit of housekeeping to take care of. Malachi,
go ahead.
You are not going to be allowed to leave the show without answering this question. The answer can be as philosophical or as sophomoric as you want it to be, but if you could put anything on a t-shirt, what would it be?
Oh, geez. With some of the people I have to deal with at my work, I work retail. Do you know the phrase, excuse me?
Okay.
I am amazed at the amount of people, customer-wise, at my job that cannot say excuse me while I'm working.
Okay.
Yep. I remember my days in food service, so yeah, I think I get it.
And it's what gets me though is this is seems like more of a recent thing, like since lockdowns have ended in 2020, 2021. Mm. You know, maybe like the last year or two, that's gotten really bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you bring up a good point there. I've noticed like courtesy has just kind of like started dying.
Yeah.
Just general courtesy that people used to have for each other. And I know, Jeffro talked about this when he was on the show, this kind of like death of basic social expectations that we used to have as a society. It's so weird to, I used to think it was weird when my mom would say, you know, oh, they didn't even say, you know, have a nice day. But now when, you know, like someone at Starbucks just kind of hands me a cup of coffee and is just like, all right, you know, our interaction is over, and they don't say anything to me, I'm just like, no, have a nice day.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I don't know either.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for Rolling Bones this evening. Next week, we will have a show. However, we will be doing it on a different night. We'll be doing it on Monday night the 20th. And we're doing this for a very specific reason. And that is because we will be joined by someone I've been wanting to have on the show for a long time. And that is T-Shirted Historian. He is going to be on here on a special Monday night Rolling Bones next week. T-Shirted Historian will be joining me. So I'm looking forward to that. Unfortunately, Max, we are over for the evening. But you know, I do look forward to hearing your thoughts on it after the fact. So just where to find me if if you have anything to say about that. That's it for tonight's show. And until next time, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I am so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard. Guys, thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you all next time.
Yeah. Dag iedereen.